America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Homeless addicts are the real reason for Seattle public library closures. Am I right or am I right? Poor people, mentally ill drug addicts ruining our libraries, places that people go all the time for many reasons because Americans still read. All the data supports that, right?
Sure.
Right? I mean, I go to the library. I'm at the library right now. I'm going crazy.
Are you? Are you looking up some good books there,
buddy? Broadcasting live from the Seattle library. A bunch of other stories here, a bunch of other local stuff. You know, I find what's really interesting about the kind of homeless problem that we have right now. You know, there's this thing in Oregon where they're saying, you know, can homeless people be fined for sleeping outside? A rural Oregon city asked the United States Supreme Court, why would you want to fine mentally ill people, right? Why would you want to fine people who are destitute, who are mentally ill, who are incapable? They have met the literal definition of I cannot take care of myself. Food, mm-hmm. shelter, right?
Right.
The literal definition. And you say to yourself, yeah, gee whiz, how are we going to solve this homeless problem? I know. We'll fine those people.
Sure.
Squeezing blood from a stone, right?
Well, what we're doing is we're tacking up little instances so that we can gather in groups to get these people off the streets and make them somebody else's problem, the problem of the punitive penal system. Right? Yeah. If I give you 6 tickets for being homeless and sleeping on the streets and you can't pay them, all of a sudden, you're not just homeless, you're in arrears of court-ordered fines.
Yeah, and then you get into the industrial complex.
Now you're catching on.
Now we're making money. Am I right or am I right? I think that we as a society, I often say that I think that when people see homeless people, they experience a certain amount of grief and sadness because mm-hmm. it's very sad to see another human being suffer, but then they get mad about it. They get angry, right? And
sure.
So we begin to kind of collate all of the resentments that we have towards this group of people. Lazy, layabout, drug addict,
right.
Can't use public transportation, violence, whatever it is, right?
Had the same opportunities I had, just decided not to make any effort.
Right, didn't make any effort, right? And so I think that it might help people to do a kind of a philosophic shift in the way that we view people who are literally unable to take care of themselves. What's interesting about this, though, is that when I say this, I don't think that people realize what I'm saying is that you need to triage literally hundreds of thousands of people throughout the United States who are being eaten up and left behind by the system. But, you know, there is this real resentment that people have towards homeless people. Just as a really quick example, homeless addicts are the real reason for the Seattle Public Library closure. Sure. Yeah. Jason Rance did this piece talking about the staffing shortfall and how many of the libraries have become, you know, for the drug addicted and mentally ill homeless individuals, they've escalated emergencies across library branches, creating an environment where safety concerns are dictating too many operational decisions. My question is, are we going to find a solution to this? Why aren't you triaging all those people? If there was a pigeon loose in a library, all of a sudden everybody's MacGyver. We got to figure out, okay, we got to get up into the rafters. We got to get a broom and a bucket. Well, we don't want to hurt it, so maybe we should put a towel in the bucket, try to get it in there. I mean, it's so interesting the way that we view human beings versus animals, wherein if there is a pigeon that has flown its way into a Safeway, everybody stops, right? Now we're all DEFCON 9. Got to solve this problem.
Sure. Poor pigeon, they say.
I saw a living, breathing human being, upper half in the bushes, lower half on the sidewalk, laying there, passed out from drugs, and people are walking over, around, and turning around to avoid it.
Nobody showed up with a bucket or a broom
or
to help collect him and take him to safety.
Trying to make sure he wouldn't break his wings, kind of release him back. That's what I'm saying, man. Like, there is a sincere... I think it's largely because people are tired of the homeless encampments and they're tired of dealing with drug addicts and they're tired of the way their city looks. And I understand all of that. But you should not be mad at homeless people. You should be mad at the system, which is incapable currently based on a series of both federal and state laws of solving this problem. It's not a Democrat issue. Certainly isn't a Republican issue, right? It's solely a system that has been put in place, which is now damaging the people who are at most need of our help and assistance.
So do you blame a legislature for reacting to the needs and demands of its population?
What do you mean?
And trying to criminalize homelessness?
Yes, I do. Right? Absolutely, 100%. I blame that legislature. Because they can't come up with a better solution. A better solution is triaging it, right?
I would agree.
But because they want to do shorthand what they want, and because they don't want their constituents to be upset with them, they say, that, well, let's criminalize it like that's ever worked. Ever one time, right?
Right.
So, like, there is this really bizarre world that we live in where we resent these people for being mentally ill, traumatized, likely, you know, a completely
substance addicted,
unable to take care of themselves.
Right.
And we view them with scorn and malice simply because we don't like the aesthetic of garbage and home and people suffering. And that is a real issue that no one really wants to talk about, because we'd rather criminalize it. We'd rather have clean libraries. And then we can, as soon as we have our nice aesthetics, then maybe we can do something about it. Right.
Yeah.
Maybe we could, then we can really deal with it. I mean, it's like, I have no other way other than to encapsulate it other than we have a society which despises and detests the suffering of other people to the point where they're willing to throw them in jail for suffering.
Well, in Jason's piece about why the libraries are closing because of Democratic policies, the reason libraries are open to the homeless as safe places during business hours is because there's no funding in the system to help these people and provide the kind of triage and support. Mental health care, physical care, whatever it might be, there's nothing in the system for that. Democrats didn't vote out those funds from our system that could care for this community. That wasn't a Democratic solution, or that wasn't a Democratic policy. The solution is, hey, let's give them someplace to go. Now, the homeless come into the libraries, and they abuse the system. They abuse the efforts from local legislators to help them throughout the day, get them a safe, dry place to be during the day. So, I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around, but none of it is solution oriented.
No. And a lot of it is, like, you know, Jason writes in this piece, because of Seattle Democrats' failures.
Right.
Drug addicted, mentally ill, homeless have created an emergency at various Seattle library. Like, yeah, it's an emergency. I don't want to see a librarian get assaulted. That's because they're not mental health care providers.
That's right.
And yet what we do. What is we like to put these fun buzzwords around this issue when we say the homeless industrial complex. Yeah, that social worker making $58,000 a year. She's really profiting off of the homeless industrial complex. Like what we do is we like to point fingers and blame and try to make it seem as if this is an issue that is easily solved. Let's say you get rid of the homeless industrial complex. Hooray, we did it, right? No more big checks going out to all these Democrat bigwigs. Celebration in the streets. It's done. What are we doing now? You got rid of the homeless industrial complex, if it exists. What do you do now?
Ship them off to Renton?
What's the program now? You send them somewhere else?
Yeah, move them down the street.
What are you going to do? It's like, you know, most of these people are probably on the spectrum. They're probably mostly schizophrenic. Laura is frowning at me right now, which is hurting my feelings. What did I say, Laura, that offended you so horribly, my friend?
Nothing.
Why are you frowning at me? Have I done something to upset you?
No.
But you're frowning at me.
I'm not frowning at you.
I'm codependent, Laura. I'm emotionally codependent. If you're not okay, I'm not okay.
I'm allowed to frown at the text line and then glance your way.
Why, whatever does the text line have to say today? Whatever do those fine luminaries of philosophic thought have to say today?
What the text line always has to say.
Oh, please, I would love to know.
I really would love to not tell you.
Really? Thank you.
Read one of them. Just read one of them, Laura. Oh. I would really appreciate it.
I'll give you a second to find a good one.
Okay, I would really appreciate that. Because it will be a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Where there is such a deficit of wanting to be solution-oriented about it, and there is such an addiction to rage because that feels like movement. Anger feels like something is getting done, but this is something that we understand that when children are mad, we try to teach them to control their emotions around things that upset them.
Yes.
But as adults, if you want to rage and be mad and say, "You've got blood on your hands, Jay Inslee," no one ever says to that adult, "Hey, man, you want to take 10 minutes in the corner, maybe go think about your actions before you come back and talk to the adults?" Give me an example here, Laura.
Okay, this one is not safe to read. I'm going to read one that's a little bit more compassionate.
Okay, please do.
There was a man in a Fred Meyer up north that had passed and people were shopping around him. Not one person called.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, right? Now, I'm not saying that it's everybody's responsibility to do that, and I'm not blaming anybody for falling victim to the the way that we choose to deal with mentally ill people in this country. I'm not blaming anybody for that. What I'm saying is, and I'm not judging anybody, I am simply observing from what I have seen in the Pacific Northwest, people are very keen to be mad first and solution-oriented never. Never. And then, you know, Andrea Suarez does a good job picking up garbage, and she's rehomed about, 200 people, according to the website. That's really nice. King County's done about 9,000 people. That's really nice. But then we get hung up on things like money. And we get, I don't really care how much it costs to save a human life. Does that make me a lib? Does that make me an insane, you know what I mean? Like, this is a real bizarre philosophic paradigm that we've placed on ourselves by saying that you can ascribe a dollar amount to a human life, and it is less if that person is mentally ill, drug addicted, or has a history of trauma and abuse. It is significantly less.
Almost non-existent,
dude.
If the person is a person of lesser means.
It's your problem, right?
Give me that cash,
my man,
and I will do this thing.
Give me that cash, and I will do this thing.
Is the way we elect politicians and the cycle we elect politicians, is it conducive to you have a long-term, humane approach to this problem? This problem that affects almost every aspect of city life or King County life.
Yeah.
The way we elect city officials, to the constant pendulum back and forth, one extreme to the other, is it ever going to give us the means to have a long-term humane solution?
It's a federal thing because we don't forcibly institutionalize people anymore without court orders. Does that make sense?
Like, sure.
We don't, the process to get somebody forcibly institutionalized is very, very difficult. And then on top of all of that, it's even harder to actually find somebody long-term locked care. And so now we have it in the streets. And again, all I hear in my head right now is the blame game.
Yeah.
I hear people blaming other people, but I choose not to do that because it doesn't hey, pro tip, when you blame people, it solves nothing. It's not actually a solution to blame anybody. You're not even diagnosing the problem. You're just saying it's your fault because you're the party in charge, which, like newsflash, is a trash argument. Because if that was true, the top 10 states that take the most in federal welfare and contribute the least to the overall tax, income tax, the United States, they're all red states. You don't understand? Like, for people to run this narrative around that it is somehow a quote-unquote blue problem simply because the largest metropolitan areas in the United States are in blue states is not only a fallacy of logic, it's a misinterpretation of the data set that you're being presented. But most people don't think about it that way because it's a lot easier to say homeless industrial complex than it is to actually think about what it means to live in a county that has how many people living in it? 2 million?
2 million plus.
And then you have a homeless population of about 16,000 people. It's like, please. And then people call me the elitist because I say be solution oriented and don't hate that person who's suffering. And what do I get for it? What do I get for
ridicule?
Ridicule. Can you imagine, really quick, can you imagine Jesus Christ coming down and saying, hey, you guys, let's not be mean or crass to poor people, and let's not be cruel to people who are trying their best within a very complex legal framework to try to solve what is otherwise a very difficult problem. People would be like, boo,
woke.
Jesus, what are you, some kind of socialist?
Woke Jesus, get out of here.
Like, it is bizarre.
I hear you, buddy.
And the reason that I get so triggered by it is because I cannot be the only person who thinks that we deserve better as a society than to allow people to rot and die in the streets, right?
And you would never legislate to make that happen even faster. That story in Oregon just drives me nuts. Let's criminalize homelessness so we can find a different mechanism to get them out of our face and off of our streets and somebody else's problem.
Yeah, it's really quite very sad. And, you know, I think that the end results of all of this will be a continuation of people getting frustrated, which is fine. I understand. It frustrates me, too. I'm very frustrated about it. The difference between me and, 99% of other people is I choose not to blame anybody because you need a coalition to try to get stuff done in this country. And when you blame people and when you call them Satanists or profiteers or, you know, demons or whatever you can't really make a team out of that. You can't really build any kind of relationship when you're so preoccupied and high off of the intoxicating fumes of blaming somebody else because they have a certain letter in front of their name.
Yeah. Completely undermines any kind of progress, any kind of move forward at all.
Well, Spike, I mean, you and I have had differences, right?
Sure.
You and I have had, how many times have you and I gotten into arguments or fights?
Ooh,
a dozen or so?
A couple handfuls.
How many times have I called you or texted you that day and said, hey, buddy, I apologize for A, B, C, or D?
Once.
No.
I'm kidding. I kid. Every time.
Every time.
Every single time.
That's the sound of Spike and I fighting right there. That's a too, literal man. Fight. Point being is that you can solve conflict, but you can't do it if you choose to carry resentment. And all I see from this finding people for sleeping outside, camping ordinances or whatever, I only see resentment. That's all that I see. I see resentment and derision and hatred for other human beings. And if you want to live in that world, that's fine. I just choose to, you know, follow in the path of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and not hate other people when they're suffering.
And all due respect to Jason Rance, this piece is a great piece. But when you say democratic policies and you blame this whole thing on, you know, a policy of trying to help those, the least among us, give them a safe place to be every day, that doesn't get us anywhere either.
I'm just going to say mean things about Jason because I like him so much is what I'm going to do. He's got great hair and his shoes always match his tie.
I don't know how he does
that. I can't believe he does that on a regular basis. And also, he cracks funny jokes and he sends me funny memes. I can't stand it when he does those things. Can you believe that conservative over there thinking he's so great because he wears matching shoes and matching ties? Got a great sense of humor.
Wonderful sense of humor.
I can't believe that guy. Yep. All right. Well, that was my big epic homeless person rant. Laura, anything worthwhile to wrap this out with?
On the text line?
Anything worthwhile?
No.
Nope.
And that's we love
really
you all.
That's
please
really
keep
sad.
Texting
that's really
us.
Sad, though, that you know what I mean? That people are so reactive that they feel the need that they can't even contribute to a conversation. Do you know what I mean? That to me is actually just proving my point. It just reinforces the belief that I had when I started this 18 minutes ago. Am I not correct, Laura, that these people are all completely filled with malice and hatred for people that they do not know?
Hee Haw Heron says, Laura, you're doing a great job. Smile. Happy thoughts. Have a great week.
You see my point? You see my point, man?
I hear you, buddy.
And the funny thing is that we'll probably take those people, you talk to them for an hour, they change their mind. Talk to them for an hour, right, about the way that they actually feel about it, how to navigate their emotions around it. But it is so intoxicating to hate other people in this country, it's not even funny.
Don't they have to be willing to hear the other side of an argument? And nobody is anymore. Even me.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I think the other thing is that government is always incredibly disappointing to people.
Yeah.
And so at a certain point in time, people give up and they just say government bad. I did that myself many, many years ago. I just said government bad, government bad, government bad. And then I was in a relationship with someone who worked for an agency that worked for the government. And I saw how... where the failures were and how it could be improved.
Yeah, how dedicated they were to the cause, right?
We don't throw things out simply because they don't work a couple of times or they're not fully functional.
Right.
If we did that, we would have no old people.
as the closest among us to old people, in fact, I'm sometimes at the meetings, so I appreciate the thought.
And just the idea that something is flawed does not mean that something cannot be improved, right? Like, this is a basic tenet of American philosophy. Just because something is flawed does not mean that it cannot be improved. Just because something is broken does not mean it cannot be fixed. And this insistence that in some way, shape, or form, we're going to go back to Green Acres, where King County only has 100,000 people in it, and only two homeless men, and they're drinking vanilla Coke out of a brown paper bag underneath the old oak tree, is a lie that will never happen. Right.
I'm with you. I appreciate it. Progress, not perfection, folks.
Jake Skorheim, attorney at law, coming in because Coachella was this last weekend, and Will Smith made a bizarre, what do you want to call it? Was performance?
An appearance. It was a performance. Yeah, he performed.
But it was bizarre.
I'm not a big fan of either Coachella or Will Smith outside of his movie career.
How dare you?
I can't believe we could have stood up there and acted at a scene from a movie.
We'll speak to our senior entertainment correspondent, Mr. Skorheim, when we get back right after this.
The Mariners are all about giving you more baseball for your buck. With Mariners Value Games, you can snag seats for as little as $10 to select games all season long. To get your tickets and check out the complete Mariners Value Game schedule, go to mariners.com/valuegames.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, yes. Will Smith. I was blanking on his name. I thought, what's the name of that actor?
The guy who slapped Chris Rock. We'll just call him that for
now. Yeah, and then didn't get arrested for assaulting another human being in front of I don't know how many million people. Was it Coachella? Did a Men in Black performance. It was very awkward, very uncomfortable. Thankfully, our senior cultural correspondent, Jake Skorheim, is in the studio.
Hey, that's me.
Skorheim, Skorheim, and Skorheim, attorneys at law. Well, soon it's going to be Skorheim, 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 and Skorheim, right? Four boys?
Skorheim. Well, I would probably start the firm, and then I would have four sons who would join me.
It's five. Confirmed to be a boy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, that's my man over there, Skorheim, about to be a daddy in, what, 2 weeks?
A little under 2 months. Wow. We're expecting our fourth baby.
Yeah. Congratulations,
baby. How's the missus?
She's ready for this baby to get out.
Yeah, I believe
she's
it.
She's excited.
have you picked out a name yet?
We have.
I am honored you picked a name it after me, Jake. That's so
very
sweet.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Yeah, you heard, did you?
But have you just decided on a name?
No, not really yet. We've had three already, so your list gets pretty short. When you know.
I like Stein Skorheim. It rolls off the tongue.
Stein Skorheim. Yeah.
I really do.
I hear Methuselah is coming back in popularity in terms
of
names.
Yeah. And like Maddie could be his nickname, which is kind of cute. For sure.
So Will Smith, speaking of generic names, has decided to surprise members of Coachella with a surprise performance. Hooray, it's me. It's Will Smith. But when I saw it, it was incredibly awkward. It was incredibly weird. And I'm not sure if Will Smith fully realizes how awkward it is to be the guy who slapped another man on TV and then waited how many weeks to make an apology? Like months?
It was five, 6 weeks.
And then
Did you
not hear about this?
When did this happen?
So about 3 years ago, Chris Rock is doing a thing. He's going to give out an award at the Academy
Awards.
Oscars,
yeah.
And he cracks a joke about Will Smith's wife's hair.
I can't keep the bit going. I knew what it was.
Okay.
I knew he slapped Chris Rock.
You know, it's funny. More people knew about the slap, as Jake was kind of trying to play with, then knew who Will Smith, who Agent J was at Coachella.
Can we just for a half second, how crazy is it that guy slapped another man on national TV?
Yeah.
Like the fact that even happened still kind of blows my mind. Like every time I see I don't see many of them anymore because I think he's like rightfully and his team have rightfully said like, hey, we should probably like get this guy out of the public eye as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I always am like, oh yeah, he slapped Chris Rock.
Yeah.
And this is going to define him for the rest of his life. I was a massive Will Smith fan.
Really?
Yes, of course.
What's your favorite Will Smith movies? Throw out a couple of them.
Okay, Men in Black movies are great.
Trash.
I enjoyed those. Great deal.
Trash.
Not Boys to Men. What was
Bad Boys.
With Chris Martin. Martin Lawrence.
Martin Lawrence.
Trash.
Chris Martin. He was also good in the Happiness movie. What one was that?
Pursuit of Happiness.
He was also good in 7 Pounds.
Such a big fan there, Jake.
He was also good in Getting Jiggy With It.
Yeah.
Yes. No, because when I was young, I wasn't allowed to listen to like harsh music. My parents were very protective. I've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Protective of popular culture things. Will Smith is a very radio safe type of a guy.
Very mom and dad safe kind
of
guy.
Yes. So I was able to listen to like whatever his 2000 album was. I think Getting Jiggy With It might have been on that.
Big Willie style.
Big Willie style.
1988.
Big Willie style.
So what was the. You can kill the music, Andrew.
Please. So then when he slapped Chris Rock, I mean, it's like slapping me.
But what was the moment that you realized that you had been a sheltered child? Because I realized it when my grandfather brought me the Beatles anthology on cassette. And I was listening and I thought, I'm a sheltered child. That's when I realized. It because it was non-religious music, so I'm curious, when was the moment that you realized that you would had
you know it didn't really hit me fully until I got into high school, and I can tell you exactly when I realized that I was a very sheltered child, because you don't really know it when you're a child and you're sheltered.
It's
my only existence. It's like
right.
that's all I knew. But when I was in eighth grade, I really loved playing baseball. So I was, I wanted to go and be competitive playing baseball, which meant I wanted to go play at the public high school. And so I was going to then a public school. I went from eighth grade. I had gone to private school my entire, kindergarten through eighth grade. I'd never had an experience outside of that. And so I didn't even call it public. We called it secular school. And which was a very, like, that's a very sheltered kid thing to do. And so I was like, I would tell my friends, like, did you guys hear? Like, I'm going to secular school next year. And they were like, what are you talking about? Like, how could you possibly? So I, you know, but it was a great experience. And I, you know, many dear friends still from my time in secular school. The baseball career obviously didn't work out, but it was still fun to try things. But I was very, you know, I realized once I got to public school that the life that I had known was no more. And it was very different.
What was there a pivotal moment where you realized?
Yeah, like day one.
Yeah.
Like walking around.
Music with the.
That kid over there smoking, that never would have happened in my old school. Those kids over there making out, they would have been kicked out.
Yeah.
Those kids over there, like, they don't appear to be going to school. They're leaving school. I don't understand
the,
this.
Do they know the school's this way?
Yeah.
This is the wrong direction.
Are these must be small adults. But so it was very, like, that was a big experience for me, kind of a life-changing event. But it was fun. I really, and I'm super glad I did it. And, you know. Worked out all right.
Jack, when did you realize you'd lived a sheltered childhood?
I just told that story. Do you want me to tell it again?
Yeah, did I miss it?
Can you tell it one more time?
I'll tell it again.
It was the Beatles tape?
It was when my grandfather brought me the Beatles anthology.
Because
I even prefaced it by saying, the moment that I realized that I was a sheltered child.
If my memory serves, it had to do with the Beatles anthology?
That's correct.
And then
I went through that whole story, and I said I had listened to it on cassette, and then you looked at me and you nodded an affirmation, which told me, based on the rules of social connection, that you not only heard but understood that that was the moment that I realized that I didn't realize
it was just the introduction of different music was what you were sheltered from. Was just
music. I had no idea that there was a world out there that was not religious music.
Then
I'm listening to Please Please Me, and I'm going,
Did you listen to DC Talk when you were a kid?
No.
You didn't ever listen to DC Talk?
No.
Okay, so DC Talk was like a Christian rap group. Again, it was very safe.
Okay.
It's pretty good, actually. Like, if you're into Christian rap, they would probably be pretty high on the list. I don't know. I haven't listened to a lot of Christian rap in probably the last 20, 30 years, but I imagine they're still probably pretty popular. I don't know about that.
No, we were much more in the vein of what can wash away our sins. Very nice song for a five-year-old to sing. Nothing but the blood of Jesus.
Is that a Metallica song?
That's a little Dio right there. It's a little Ronnie James Dio.
Nothing but the blood.
Right, exactly. So, Jake, what's your overall verdict on this Coachella appearance from Will Smith? Is it good? Is it bad? Are you for it? Are you against it? Is it ungodly? What's your verdict?
You know, I wouldn't say it's ungodly. That's not for me to judge. In fact, we're supposed to not judge. But I will say that I think anybody who goes to Coachella, I find curious, especially when you get over the age of 21.
Yes.
If I'm a 21-year-old and I'm in Coachella and everybody's very young, that makes sense. But, like, when I see pictures of, like, this is nothing against Jeff Bezos. I admire a lot of the stuff that guy's done, but I saw, like, Jeff Bezos and his girlfriend or fiance, pictures of them at Coachella. And I just think, like, what on earth is Jeff Bezos interested in Coachella for? Like, this man could be anywhere in the world. He could literally buy anything he wants. And he's in the middle of the desert with a bunch of young people who are just posing for photographs.
He's in the middle of a desert under a VIP tent with air conditioning, not near.
Well, I know, but
Gen
just like
Pop at Coachella.
The need to be seen at Coachella confuses
me. That's what it is.
Skorheim, that's an appropriate take, my friend. I think that's the best take that anybody could have on this issue. Because I was trying to put my finger on it, but I think, Jake, you put the phrasing of it so accurate. It is very weird to say, I'm going to go out and stand in the hot desert and have just my tinnitus act up and have my knees give out on me for standing after 6 hours.
Wearing a suit from 25 years ago that nobody in the audience recognized what you're doing.
How to leave a bad online review without being a jerk. Thank you, Mr. Skorheim. The story we're going to talk about when we get back right after this. By the way, Mr. Skorheim puts on his own show every single night between 7 and 10. It is a very difficult show to do all by your lonesome. Thankfully, he's got Matt Butler there, but Jake does all the production on that show, which is an insane task for any company to place on the shoulders of that young man right over there. So, we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spike, did I ever tell you when I learned I was a sheltered child?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm so sorry, Matt. I was trying to expand more on just a cassette tape of the Beatles. Because I didn't have anything like a sheltered childhood at all.
Really?
Nothing like it.
Why? Was the old man showing, hey, this is what Playboy is, little man?
No, but I had two parents. I worked in a two-income household.
Okay.
Both my parents worked with them. So my brother and I were raised in large part from free babysitting by my teenage aunts and uncles. So I was literally in the back of a car driving around on a Saturday evening listening to Alice Cooper and Moody Blues music.
Yeah,
inhaling secondhand weed smoke under the age of 10. So nothing like that is sheltered. I got to public school and I was the one who was shocking people.
Laura, do you think that you had a sheltered childhood?
Yes.
In what way?
In that I went to a private high school and didn't smoke anything illicit until I was like 16 at camp.
What? You smoke something illicit at 16? You're grounded. I think that most people don't understand that you know, children need to be introduced into, you know, different things at different behavioral or developmental stages.
Yeah, but that's pretty based.
But at the same time, I think that what happens is that some parents get really, they don't really expand their child's ability to go out and to take care of themselves. Like, give an example, my ex-wife, her little brother is 14 years younger than she is.
Okay.
So he's a little baby. And I remember when he was, I think he had just turned 11 or 12. I'm not sure. We went over to their house just to have like a nice lunch. Mm-hmm. And he comes downstairs. I think it's 2:00 in the afternoon. He has not showered. He's in pajama pants. I realize it's the weekend, but still. Mm-hmm. And he comes down. And he goes, Mom, I'm hungry. And she's like, well, you can make yourself some ground beef. And he goes, I don't know how. Like, and I'm thinking to myself, when I was 12, I was cooking myself full dinners. Like, I, you know what I mean? There's
sure.
a certain kind of what is developmentally appropriate before someone just becomes hostily dependent on mom and dad, which is the case of little Chase.
Yeah.
Being very hostily dependent on mom and dad. I don't know how. Well, you take the ground beef out of the fridge and you put it in a pan. I don't want to burn myself. I mean, it turned into this whole thing where I was like, Chase, do you want me to show you how to do it? No. And I'm like, okay, come in the kitchen. I'll show you how to do it. You know what I mean? These 12 didn't know how to brown beef.
Well, it's amazing what sheltered means to different people. That's clearly somebody who has had things done for them, doesn't have to learn how to sustain or take care of themselves on a regular basis. That's sheltered. Well, for as Laura's, you know, never heard anything beyond an Osmond Brother record. That's how old I am, by the way.
You know, it's like my mom has pretty bad, what do you want to call it? She was infantilized as a kid.
Oh, parents didn't want her to grow up too fast?
Did everything for her because she was deaf. She had scarlet fever back when that was a thing.
That's a special circumstance.
No, it's not, because she's functionally illiterate. She doesn't know how to do anything. And every time, like the other day, her car insurance came up. She had to renew her car insurance.
Couldn't do it.
So she texts me, my car insurance needs, panicking. I can't drive without my car insurance. I said, Mom.
Yeah.
I go, Mom, that you call the number to Farmers Insurance and you use the telerelay service and you say, hello, I would like to renew my car insurance. I don't know how. Okay, do you want me to show you? No, I'll burn myself. I was like, okay, Mom, let's walk through the process. You'll be on the phone, and then I will be. This is the chain of events. Mama J, me, iPad, iPhone, and then Mama J on her iPhone is communicating via relay service to Farmers, and I'm walking her through this process, okay? If you've not, there's not a chain of technology that is more complex than that, right? It's easier to talk to the International Space Station than to get my mom to renew her health or her driver's insurance by herself.
I'm so ashamed and embarrassed right now because both my kids are infantilized.
Infantilized,
and they both hear fine, and I've still raised them that way where they don't know how to do anything. I'm a horrible parent.
No, you're a good dad.
They're happy, but just non-functioning.
Andrew, A+ today, buddy. Excellent work with the drops and the ambience. Wonderful commentary. Chris Martin, dang, is that a striped cardigan you got on there, buddy? Take your time.
Is that what?
A striped cardigan.
Is that a striped cardigan?
Yeah, it's my Freddy Krueger look.
Dang, Chris, you're looking fly. You're looking fresh to death today, Chris.
Ironically enough.
Great way to use Laura A+ today on this as well. Spike, we'll give you a solid C+.
I don't know, man, after blowing that.
No, just remember, let's always remember the story of when I realized that I was a sheltered child. Here, my friends, is your quote of the day.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
You don't give a lot of credence to MAGA voters as people.
I think that might be the most accurate statement I've ever heard you make.